is the Accidental Safety Pro live at the 2019 National Safety Congress and Expo in beautiful San Diego. My name is Jill James, Vivid's Chief Safety Officer, and today I'm joined by Tom Ander Jeske, who is the Safety Director with Hunt Electric Corporation.
Thanks, Jill.
So I got past the hardest part, was pronouncing my name? Yeah, your name pronunciation. And I thought I had it, but I sort of stumbled. Did I do okay?
Oh, you nailed it. It was great.
Ander Jeske. I got it. Now I'm going to be like saying it in my dreams, probably. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks.
I'm so happy to have you here. As a fellow Minnesotan, thanks for coming all the way to San Diego so that you and I could talk to one another.
Yeah, I don't know if we want to actually discuss how I became the Accidental Safety Pros podcast guest.
I think we probably should, because this is you were like the last minute booking.
Well, we were at the gate together, and I just said hi, and and you said, "Hey, what are you doing at
whatever time
it is right now?" And I said, "Well, what do you want to do?"
Yeah.
And here we are.
So Tom and I know one another a little bit from our shared safety histories. Our paths cross once in a while, and they crossed again this week at the airport. And so I'm like, oh, Tom, I don't have Tom's story. And so I'm so happy to have you here. So thanks for coming all the way on the plane with me to San Diego accidentally. And here we are to share a story. So, Tom, as you are familiar with the podcast, the Accidental Safety Pro is a pun to talk about how did the safety field find you or how did you find it. So how many years have you been at this gig?
I've been doing this for 36 years now. And I think particularly back then, people did find the field accidentally. I'm really pleased that currently, you know, there's some younger folks that work for me now that they specifically went for a degree program to qualify them to do the work.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how much that existed 36 years ago.
Right.
So what I actually was a plant and facilities engineer.
Okay.
And I held that job for got a really great offer. I worked for an aerospace company down in Eden Prairie, and but a year after I joined them, I got caught up in their first layoff ever. I still like to think that was, you know, last in, first out kind of a choosing. And then when I re-entered the job market, it was as a field engineer for American Mutual. And at the time, American Mutual was like the only company that wrote unsupported workers' compensation, which only means that they didn't write any other lines.
Okay.
And or maybe they were one of the only companies that would write work comp without anything else in Minnesota.
Okay.
And got some great training by a good group of guys, and I would consider one of my safety mentors, Mike Hannafin. And from there, did that for a few years, and really got tired of kind of like going from doorstep to doorstep to all the customers. The customers, just trying to, you know, tweak or push them in the right direction, and then being disappointed the next time I showed up that they really hadn't accomplished much or changed at all.
Yeah, so you were doing like safety audits, and were you maybe doing training with them and like steering them in a direction like here's where your gaps are? Is that what the job was with?
Well, I think the job at that time was more the eyes and ears of the underwriting department to assess the risk.
Yeah.
I was probably 23 or 4 at the time. Uh-huh. So, you know, I'm not sure I was the most credible guy to come in and do training for the groups, although, and quite frankly, I didn't do it much, but had enough of a knowledge base to assess whether they were a good risk or not.
Yeah.
And you know, it was a pretty heady job for a young kid because,
right,
you know, you could make a recommendation that would either make them a non-renewal candidate, or if they were really awful, and that rarely occurred, you could actually cancel their policy.
Sure. And you were impacting their premiums, too, based on, I suppose, the assessments that you were doing.
In the long view.
Yeah.
For sure.
So that was kind of your foray into safety, working in workers' compensation.
Yeah, and it was excellent. And it was an excellent company. They did a lot of development with us, and it was the basis of all my safety knowledge.
Yeah. I bet you learned a lot about hazard recognition skills just having gone, like you said, so many doors that you went through, so many places that you went.
Sure,
you like saw a lot.
Yeah, metal fabricating and yeah, just a variety of exposures. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's true now. You know, I'm jumping ahead to my current position, but you know, with a variety of clients that we have, get exposed to a lot of different operations.
So
that's cool. So after doing that for a couple of years and getting frustrated with the inability to impact much of a change, went to Red Owl Food Stores and stayed there until. They were purchased by Super Value.
I remember that.
And then spent next segment of my career as safety director for Waldorf Corporation, which was kind of a legacy of the Horner Waldorf organization. And eventually, and they still make paper down in the Midway area of St. Paul.
Wow. I mean, that's a lot. If grocery from a grocery store to a paper mill. That's a lot of different hazards. That's interesting.
Well, when you challenge me on that, yeah, you're right.
It is. I mean, that's a big, from a retail space. And grocery does absolutely have legitimate hazards. And paper processing, certainly a different scope of hazards. Yeah,
it's big, heavy machinery. And the potential for, significant loss is pretty great. And live steam and heavy rotating equipment and... Mm-hmm.
Massive lockout tagout emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But inherited some cool things from kind of the Horner Waldorf, legacy. And we just did some cool things there. Mm-hmm. And it was a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of printing operations there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried my hand at consulting for a while.
Okay.
And I won't mention that company's name because, in the end, it was at a period of my life where I thought, hey, I can take on anything.
Yeah.
And part of my role was, I had to remain chargeable, but I also had to recruit enough business and discovered maybe I'm not the world's greatest marketing person.
I had that same discovery. One of my jobs was with the shortest job I ever had in safety was working for a customized training department out of a technical college. And I was to sell my safety services and deliver on training. And I thought, well, I love doing training. This is going to be easy. But then when I figured out I had to, drum up my own business, I'm quickly like, I don't think the sales life is for me. That's a talent set that I don't possess.
I'm right there with you. And to me, it was almost like two full-time jobs. And I wasn't good at one of them, so it wasn't a really good fit.
Yeah.
And then the only job I ever got by answering a newspaper ad was the current one with Hunt.
Wow.
And that's made up really if you count years, it's made up the bulk of my safety career now.
Wow.
And really blessed to have fallen in with a company with really all the top management support you'd want. And I think even some of those managers would currently argue that fact. But the truth of the matter is... I hope I have a great reputation in the Twin Cities safety and health community.
Mm-hmm.
And while part of that is hopefully my doing, part of it is, I feel bad for professionals who get in situations where they really don't have the support that they need to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And by and large, I have at Hunt, and we've accomplished some really cool things.
So, for people who aren't familiar with Hunt, when you hear electrical, people maybe think of lots of different things than an electrical corporation would do. But what's the kind of the 30,000 foot view of what Hunt does?
Well, it's evolving. A large part large commercial construction.
Okay.
You and I joked about it, when my friends know that I work for an electrical contractor and they want an outlet installed at their house, they go, hey, could one of your guys come over? And it's like, no,
it's not
that kind of electrical contractor.
Yeah.
And we work on, enterprise data centers and hospitals. And and we work for our local clients nationally. And we also have, really strong group of national clients that we perform work for.
So the bulk of your work is, if we're talking OSHA compliance for a second here, is it primarily construction the construction safety, or do you cross into the general industry with the work your employees do as well?
That's also evolving.
Yeah, okay.
You know, because the bulk of it was construction for years.
Yeah.
But our service group has gotten larger and larger, and those are the folks who might go to our customer base is a bunch of Fortune 500 companies around the Twin Cities, and the guys will show up in a job truck, and you know those loan workers present some interesting challenges of their own.
Right.
To say nothing of the vehicle hazards, because I think our roads aren't getting any safer; they're getting worse and worse.
Yes. So the scope of your work is broad by way of exposures that your employees can have, and you said the company keeps evolving. So I'm guessing the safety department has evolved over time as well. So when you started, were you the lone safety person, then you grew a team, or how did that part happen?
I was the very first full-time safety person that Hunt had. I was preceded by a project manager who held the role as a part-time title.
Yeah.
I was by myself for about 9 years. Joined by Diana Nelson, I think, 9 or 10 years later, and she's been an absolute rock star and an awesome partner. And we've continued to add to staff, and we've probably, I'm embarrassed to say, I don't know the count off the top of my head, but probably 10 or 11 safety people working for us right now.
Yeah.
A good portion of them working on a really large data project that we have going on.
Yeah.
In Nebraska.
Yeah.
And really great young people too. It's been fun.
Yes, so you've had an opportunity to mentor people as your career has progressed.
We try our best.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Oh, well, it sounds like an evolving career all these years, Tom.
It's been super fun.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not over yet. We're doing some really cool things right now.
Yeah.
Kind of the buzzword this week for some of your other guests.
Yeah.
We're creating an actively caring environment.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been engaged in working with a local PT firm that's been doing outstanding work for us.
PT meaning physical therapy.
Physical therapy.
Yeah.
And it was born out of putting solar gardens together. And solar garden work is basically, you know, a farmer gives up his, you know, someone procures a muddy cornfield that's basically unfarmable from a farmer. And then they put up, you know, a 1 to 5 to sometimes even larger meg solar installation.
Yeah.
It's highly repetitive work. We're really challenged kind of our first season of solar work because we got hit up with a lot of sprain and strain injuries that we didn't anticipate. And it was kind of an issue. It was blowing up our TRIR.
Yeah.
And engaged the services of, I'll give them a little bit of a shout out, OnSite Solutions. And they helped us in a number of ways.
And they're the physical therapy group.
That's the physical therapy group.
Mm-hmm.
And we did three things, and I think two of them aren't too avant-garde. They helped us with a stretching program. They helped us with, you know, ergonomic risk assessment training for our field leadership.
Yeah.
But some of the really cool things that we've done with them is they'll go out and help us lead stretching in the morning, hang out on the job site for a little bit to see if, you know, anybody wants an individual consult for, you know, any
aches or pains
they may be having.
Yeah.
And then the super fun part is just walking the job site. And it's so easy to catch somebody who's doing a little bit of a stretch that might indicate they're a little bit sore or something, and just diving into that and say, hey, you know, what's going on there? Is there anything we could help? And you can introduce the physical therapist. And it's an early intervention model that's been really fun. And it's been really grounding for me, too, because with all the stuff that we get involved in, sometimes you forget that you got involved in safety because you really like to help people.
Yeah.
And so it's been really grounding in that way for me. And that's kind of like closing the loop to this whole actively caring theme that you guys have had going
this week. Yeah, and you know, the partnership with physical therapy and safety, you know, for anyone who's listening who is like, I hadn't thought about that before, that it could be a partnership, or how would that work? I've done the same thing in previous jobs as well, and it can be so powerful, not only for you to learn as a safety professional, particularly on that ergonomic stuff like you were talking about, not only for you, but you said you cross-trained with your team as well to be able to identify things, but they can really be problem solvers and teachers to individuals as well. I know I had contracted with a physical therapist in a previous job that was in the turkey industry, not in a meatpacking setting, but in barns where employees were having to lift and handle and carry very large turkeys, you know, repetitively. So, and they were getting injuries like you might expect from shoulders and wrists and elbows, and because of some of the lifting and the things that they were doing with turkeys with regard to insemination and vaccination, that kind of thing. So brought in a physical therapist to watch the mechanics of how people did work, and they were able to say, hey, we can see we've got a shoulder impingement going on here every time you do this move with your elbow, you know, like higher than your shoulder, and then explaining to the employees, like, what does the inside of that structure of the shoulder look like? And here's the stress that's happening when we're doing that particular movement. And then how could we modify the work and put them in different positions so we're not impinging that shoulder all the time? And, you know, like wrist, you know, angles, and how can we change some of that stuff and how we were doing things. And, you know, their eyes just bring a different set along with their background and training to be able to explain it not only to us so that we can keep explaining it to people going forward, but to the employees too, to go, oh, yeah, I do have that pain in my neck, or I do have that pain in my shoulder, so that we could move around that, not only for them to understand, but them to then agree to try something different. I think it's really a powerful partnership with safety.
And you know, and I don't want to overstate kind of the, it's important that the safety team was part of that training, but I don't want to overstate that, because what was really important is that our field leadership was were there.
Yeah.
Okay. And I hope they're doing as much with that as I had hoped, because they're the real process specialists. Mm-hmm. You know, they've performed the work their whole lives. Mm-hmm. They've evolved to the point where, you know, they've been elevated in the organization, so they're now supervising the work, and so they're our process experts.
Yeah.
And to give them that knowledge base, mm-hmm. Hopefully will yield some significant mm-hmm. improvements, mm-hmm. or allow them to consider some of the ergonomic aspects as they engage in new and different work and new and different methods of doing a work.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's what we're getting into now, is just process improvement in general. And mm-hmm. it's really important for safety to be a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I know that when we've spoken in the past, you've talked about some, if we're going to go theory just for a second on safety, one of the people that you've paid attention to is Conklin and some of the theories on safety with that. Do you want to talk about like how you've applied some of that knowledge with your path as it's evolved?
It's disappointing to admit that I don't know if, you know, it's that I've applied it or that I wish to apply it.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about kind of engaging with the physical therapists on site and all the great work that they're doing for us, and it's had a really significant impact in reducing our TRIR, and mm-hmm. and I feel a lot of us as safety professionals get preoccupied with kind of like, you know, that all important lagging indicator, and you know, everyone around here talks at a safety show, everyone's talking about leading indicators.
Mm-hmm.
But all the customers on qualifications and pre-quals and things like that, mm-hmm. they want to know what those lagging indicator numbers are.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of pressure to reduce those numbers.
Yeah.
Our efforts with onsite have really helped in that regard.
Yeah.
But the cautionary tale I have is that you can't lose sight of the serious hazards that your company faces,
mm-hmm.
and for us that's always electrical.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, we had a pretty significant grounding incident, which kind of helped us regain that focus.
Yeah.
This summer, and I can't get into that here, but that's what gets me into, you know, Conklin has some theories about, you know, work is imagined versus work is actually performed.
Talk more about that in case somebody listening doesn't know about that.
Well, and work is imagined is just, you know, your corporate policy, management directives, not necessarily just in safety, but certainly in safety and in all regards. It's how management states that they'd like to perform work performed and what their expectations are. And in, you know, one of Todd's books, I can't quote it right now, you know, he just talks about, well, but then there's work as discovered, and that that infrequently people are performing work as imagined, and most often there's some variation, there's some adaptation they have to do.
Yeah.
And particularly for the electrical work, we have to maintain our corporate standards, but I think what's informative about the concept of work as discovered is to make certain that we're offering, we're providing the education that they need to protect themselves as they perform work that that isn't
evolving
as imagined by management and by safety.
Yeah, right. So that they can continue to keep themselves safe if things aren't following the linear path that we as safety professionals think it's supposed to be like this, because it's discovered as the work happens,
right?
Is the point, yeah.
Well, and you know, and the theory is fascinating. I think it's, you know, it's a relatively simple theory, but in practice it touches, you know, it touches on culture.
Yeah.
It touches, you and I talked about the integrity of your process and your people, and I got to be careful. I got to be careful about how I state that, because I think some Hunt people will be listening to this eventually. It's just, does the organization have the integrity so that people can let safety and let management know, I know you guys say do it this way, but this is what's really happening out in the field.
Right.
Because if we don't know that that's happening in the field, we can't help them. We can't help them.
Yeah. Add additional education or. Yeah.
It's at all levels.
Yeah.
The journeyman performing the work, you know, just having the there's a variety of reasons that they don't want to tell their foreman, hey, this is unsafe, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Because I think most of them perceive it, you know, as a means to the top of the layoff list. And we don't tell them that. They internalize that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's a type of integrity.
Yeah.
And then, you know, foreman to management or to the safety group, letting them know how it really is so that we can really address how things really are.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and management, and then just the integrity of management and even safety management, that you're not lying to yourself about how great you really are. You know, we've been really fortunate that we've developed a really great reputation, and I would safely say that safety's become part of Hunt's brand.
Yeah.
But as a safety director, I always have to caution people that, hey, I'm concerned that we're not as good as our reputation, and we need to keep working that.
Yeah, and I think that's an accurate thing for any safety professional to say, right? Because it's not like you work and arrive somewhere and then you're done. You know, it's not like you've done all this work all these years at Hunt, and now it's like, oh, check, we're good, we're going to hit cruise. You know, like it doesn't work that way with safety. And I think that's what you're getting at, is that it's evolving just like our professions and our occupation and our job path and everything else, and what you've done with the safety department that you have at Hunt. It's not, you haven't arrived and the work is finished. It's never done. And so how does that evolution continue as the company continues to grow and progress and the work changes and humanity changes and we get new employees in, and how does that work?
Yeah,
how do you keep your eye on the ball?
Yeah, and you have to appeal to a new, younger set of, you know, the generational differences.
Different skill sets and understandings. And so, yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, you're talking essentially someone might call it culture, right? We might call it the culture of the safety at a particular company or location or with a group of individuals or with their supervisor or something like that. And so, you know, how do you build what you're calling integrity so that people feel safe top to bottom throughout the company to be able to speak their truth, right? And
right.
to share with you so that you can be helpful.
But it's really part of culture, and maybe integrity was the wrong way to look at it. Mm-hmm. And really, kind of this grounding that I spoke of just has kind of reinvigorated me that I think you got to be really diligent about a way to measure your culture and a willingness to kind of take the steps to remediate your culture.
Yeah.
And those are...
So how are you looking at doing that now?
Well, I mean...
Is that what you're trying to discover?
That's really our kind of our next... I think it's our next thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of response to, you know, events of the summer.
Yeah.
That we have to understand where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, unfortunately, we're moving that direction in terms of kind of engaging employees more and you know, over not just safety, but throughout the organization,
mm-hmm.
you know, safety, quality, productivity,
yeah.
All the way around. So I think, you know, moving forward, it's the organization is going to be more receptive to it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the next big thing that I want to challenge the organization to do. We'll get together some other later date and I'll let you know how it goes.
I know, isn't that fabulous? I mean, it really is. I mean, our work, that is the nature of safety. I mean, it is always, it's never stagnant. And I think that's what keeps so many of us at this for so many years. You know, and I mean, a lot of people have a lot of jobs and professions for a long time, but I think safety people, when you talk with them, they're always talking about the next thing. They're not like, we're doing the same old thing. You know, if you're interested in taking care of people, which by and large, that's what our profession is. We care about people and humanity, that we're always looking. We're always looking to improve things. In fact, that's kind of one of the ways that our paths met, crossed. We didn't know it, but our paths did cross at one point professionally. Can tell our audience a little bit about an unintentional way that our paths crossed.
The Minnesota OSHA Mobile Earth Moving Equipment Standard, you mean?
Yes,
oh,
yes.
Okay.
So I co-authored this this law back in, I think it was approved by the legislature in 1999 on the operation of mobile earth moving equipment that I co-authored with my coworker at the time, Norm. And it was in response to deaths that I was investigating when I was with OSHA, people being... ran over by mobile earth moving equipment, not in a roadway, but in other work settings. So co-authored this law, and many years later, Tom, it was many years later, I was looking at the law again because I was writing a presentation about it, and I'm like, wait a minute, there's a new piece to this law. I don't remember writing this one little section to this piece. What happened to the law? And then you and I met somewhere.
Yep.
And it turns out.
Yeah, that was a.
You added that.
Well, it was. It was just a. You know.
Yeah.
I responded to a comment period, and I said, "Hey, we should address. You know, you're going to require high visibility garments, and we should address the fact that electricians, if they're engaged in, you know, electrical work, shouldn't be wearing a synthetic garment.
Need to be fire rated.
And basically it was language associated with NFPA 70E wasn't such a big thing back then, but it basically addressed, you know, the non FR nature of a high visibility vest and that there should be an exception carved out for electricians.
Yeah.
And that got included in the law.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I even knew that it was included in the law. I think I might have been as surprised as you were that I was reading the OSHA rules one day and I was like, hey, I wrote that.
You did, yeah. It's like maybe a sentence and a half long or something.
Yeah,
but it was
mine.
It's there and it's yours. So for anyone who's listening who's like, wait a minute, you can write safety laws? The answer is yes, you can. Yes, you can. And you can amend them, as Tom did. And it was a great amendment. So thank you for that addition.
Sure.
It was good.
Yeah, and you and I were talking earlier about, you know, mm-hmm. other... And you enjoyed that's part of our shared legacy.
Yeah.
But you know, another kind of geeky, safety guy legacy that actually I'm kind of proud of. But, mm-hmm. In fact, at the end of the week, we're going to be getting together with the Federated Electrical Contractor Group. And it's a group of, it's basically an industry association of our own choosing.
Here in San Diego.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get together. We get together a couple times a year for a few days, mm-hmm. or just to benchmark on safety.
Yeah.
And, years ago, early in my years at Hunt, I had written this live work authorization, form. Mm-hmm. And, we were just benchmarking on, hey, what do your forms look like today? And could everyone bring it? It was one of the agenda items. Hey, bring a copy of your live work authorization so that we can just see what everybody's doing with mm-hmm. this and how are you collecting the information you need to do the proper, risk assessment for authorized live energized work. Mm-hmm. And as they started passing everybody started passing their forms around, mm-hmm. and a majority of the companies had basically a variant of the form that I had written. So that's a really weird legacy of mine that a lot of the large electrical contractors around the country are using some variant of a live work authorization form that I wrote.
That's a cool legacy.
Yeah, kind of.
It is a cool legacy.
Kind of geeky, too.
Yeah. Well, hello. We are in the nerddom. It's for sure. So you mentioned, you're part of this Federated Electrical Group. And that's a good thing to mention for other safety professionals who are maybe starting out and listening. Many of us belong to organizations we're here at NSC or we belong to ASSP or we're part of BCSP, something like that. But then within industry groups, there's safety things as well. So this is one of them for you. Are there others that you're part of too that cross over in industry for you?
No, this is the main one for electrical, and it's a really amazing group. We joke that it's benchmarking, but it's part therapy because we all deal with the same challenges.
Yeah, right.
So part therapy, commiseration, and then benchmarking shared practices. Mm-hmm. And, within the group and it's large electrical contractors from all over the country. Mm-hmm. So we're by and large the safety leaders. And so, if something happens or if a new process is developed, that's shared at those meetings so we can all benefit from it.
Right, right.
And, this is just a group of people that we would partner with as we perform work around the country mm-hmm. and generally wouldn't compete mm-hmm. with.
Yep, right.
So, like I said, it's an industry association of our own choosing, but its genesis wasn't based in safety. In fact, safety came, a little bit later. I was one of, I think a handful of safety professionals that made a pitch to the ownership group that, the safety
should be at the table.
Safety people should be getting together a couple mm-hmm, times a mm-hmm, year. Mm-hmm. And it's important for us to be benchmarking in this area.
Yeah. Yeah. So for our listeners who are maybe starting out in their careers, they can, be searching for those things and asking those questions.
Or creating them.
Oh, exactly. Or creating them or asking if an organization, exists. That safety should have a seat at that table, like you said. I know that, I was part of U.S. Poultry and Egg, which sounds kind of funny, but Safety Committee for the Nation. Mm-hmm. And that was really specific to the group as well. I have another friend who I know is part of one for the Zoon Aquarium industry that's specific to that. I have another friend who's part of an organization just for sugar beets. And so they're there. And so think about, what is it that my company does? And, is there a place that I can find like-minded people in safety specific to my industry? I think that's a good tip for people.
Well, and I hope it still exists, but back in my, pulp paper days, there was a Minnesota Pulp and Paper Safety Association, mm-hmm. and it was just all the safety directors for all the mills around Minnesota, primarily in northern Minnesota. I think I was the only one in the metro area.
Sure.
We'd visit each other's mills periodically, and we'd take turns hosting meetings and benchmark.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tom, since you've been at this a while, when you need to do your own research, Where are the places that you normally go for people who are listening who are maybe like, you know, when you're trying to do your own continuing education or when you get stumped on something? Obviously, you can go to this group that you're talking about now with your cohorts, but are there other sources that you routinely go to?
I'll be honest, and I'll have to say I lean on some of the young geniuses that work in our safety department at Hunt.
Yeah.
And they're, I mean, two things happen, and I'm always interested in how people solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
Networking is really important. It's important to understand how different organizations meet certain either compliance or safety issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I always want there to be a basis in the standard to make certain that you know we're meeting those requirements.
Yep.
I mean most of what we do kind of we just make certain that we have a sound basis and we're covering all the necessary requirements.
Yep.
But for a large part we've got a pretty talented group.
Yeah.
And we chart our own course.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we check in with others, and we network among other safety professionals.
Yeah.
You know, not just in among electrical contractors, but even in the mm-hmm. Twin Cities safety and health community,
mm-hmm.
which I happen to think in the Twin Cities construction safety and health community is special. And I could name a number of people and a number of really outstanding firms, general contractors,
mm-hmm.
and other trade partners
mm-hmm.
that we keep each other sharp.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that we're infallible, but
yeah.
I think we have something special going
right.
Up in the upper Midwest.
Right, right. Yeah, so you're talking about this. You've been talking about an evolution of career and an evolution of the way that you practice safety. And I think you said it really well. Like you use the standards as that baseline, because as we all know, that's the minimum. And so then you take it to your team, and we're like, okay, if we've met the minimum, now how do we evolve this to be better than to be yeah right and more protective? And what do what's everybody else doing in industry, and how can we share and learn together? Yeah, so important. Yeah, so before we wrap up our time today, is there anything that you would like to share with 36 years into it? Do you have any sage pieces of advice?
Did I offer that, or did you come up with that?
I came up with that.
Okay.
Because I'm still learning, too.
the only thing about having done safety work for 36 years is I am particularly energized by actually everybody I work with, and Diana would be really disappointed that I don't include her in the group of young people that work for us anymore, and I'll probably hear about this for saying it.
Uh-huh.
But I'm particularly energized by working with those guys, but occasionally I take a step back and mm-hmm. I said, wow, I've been doing safety work for longer than any of you have been alive,
mm-hmm.
and that's...
Mm-hmm.
that's yeah, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Well, even my mother. My mother's 94 years old,
uh-huh.
and cantankerous as ever.
Uh-huh.
And and when we talk about age, we both our fallback is I don't know how this happened. Mm-hmm. Speaking of age,
yeah,
I don't know how this happened to me. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like an old person.
Mm-hmm.
And like my mother says, she just feels like she's a 18-year-old trapped in this
94-year-old
body. And she behaves that way, too.
Uh-huh.
So so that's cool.
So that's where you get it.
Yeah, let's hope.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Tom, thank you so much for sharing your career and your story and wise words with the audience today. I really appreciate it. And really, thank you for evolving the way you have to help Hunt be a leader. As they are and continue to be in safety.
Okay. Well, and appreciate the invite to do this. This has been fun.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much. And thank you all for spending your time listening today. And more importantly, thank you for your contribution, making sure your workers, including your temporary workers, make it home safe every day. If you'd like to join the conversation about this episode or any of our episodes, follow our page and join the Accidental Safety Pro community group on Facebook. If you aren't subscribed and you'd like to hear past or future episodes, you can subscribe in iTunes, the Apple Podcast app, or any podcast player that you'd like. You can also find all the episodes at vividlearningsystems.com/podcast. We'd love it if you could leave us a rating and review us on iTunes. It really helps connect more and more of us safety professionals to be able to share and hear one another's stories. If you have a suggestion for a guest, including if it's you, please contact me at social@vividlearningsystems.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.